Right now, joining me now in the studio is Summit County Sheriff's Lieutenant Andrew Wright. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you're filling in for Sheriff Martinez, who's still rehabbing from a snowmobiling accident. What was that like, having to respond to one of your own?
Well, actually, for us, we didn't have to respond. Luckily, he was out of town, but we're glad that he's doing better and on the mend.
Okay. Then I received from the sheriff a personal letter last week to support the Utah Sheriff's Association. I was going to ask him if had made it in. Was that legitimate?
Yeah, it is legitimate. So the way that works, sheriffs in the state of Utah are part of the Utah Sheriff's Association. They send out those letters on behalf of each of the sheriffs in each of the counties. So that did not come directly from Sheriff Martinez. They do that on his behalf. I talked to him about that. It's something that he doesn't necessarily love, because it appears that he is soliciting money from people. That money does not go directly to him. The Utah Sheriff's Association takes that money, provides scholarships each year to college students, and they use it for the annual Utah Sheriff's Association conference to bring in, you know, trainers and speakers to train deputies and officers throughout the state.
Okay, so it's not getting you any personal get-out-of-jail card fee.
Exactly, yeah. It doesn't come directly to Sheriff Martinez, nor does it come to Summit County, the sheriff's office. It goes directly to the association.
So I guess what they have found, though, it's very effective when the local sheriff then, you know, does this?
Yeah, I guess so. It appears that it's a more personal, you know, invite from your local sheriff. However, again, this is not something that Sheriff Martinez really loves, and it's not something that he does.
Let's see. I saw a report last week about somebody draining a home equity loan for some $250,000. So we're talking about fraud and theft. I mean, how does something like that even happen?
You know, that's a good question. When that report came into us, it provides a lot of presents a lot of questions to us as investigators. You know, we look into that. Of course, we have an identity theft issue. Part of that of the investigation will trying to figure out determining where this person got all that information. As you all know, it takes a lot of information to get any kind of a loan, especially a home equity line of credit. And we're talking $250,000. So right now it's unknown how that person was able to gain access to that. I don't even know at this point if it was someone that knew this person, if it happened to be a prior partner or something like that. I don't know the exact details at this point, but yeah, pretty concerning that someone could gain access to that much money.
So right now we have a victim. Do we have any leads in the case in terms of suspects?
You know, I haven't heard at this point. I know our investigators, this will be something that our investigators will take priority on, just for the mere fact that it is a large amount of money that can create a lot of heartache for someone. As you can imagine, this person is probably terrified of what the outcome's going to be with this, trying to recoup that money if the bank will work with them on a fraud aspect. And usually the institutions are pretty good about working with victims of fraud.
Yeah. So this becomes really a federal case, because now we're dealing with a couple of banks, is my understanding.
Yeah. I would imagine our investigators have reached out to the federal government, the FBI, to dive into this investigation. And so it'll be interesting to see what turns up with this.
Yeah. Any tips for, I mean, how somebody prevents that in the first place? I mean, there's all those things that you can pay for monthly, but then we even saw one of them, you know, get
hacked.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of different apps out there. There's, you know, Equifax, they provide different kind of credit monitoring options. You can subscribe to stuff like that. The big thing is make sure that you have strong passwords to get into your different banking institutions and anything that holds, you know, very personal information, a lot of your identity. You can register at utah.gov. They've got a fraud ID, identity theft database that you can go and input your information, especially if you become victim of that, so that the state can kind of track that as well. But the big thing is don't share your passwords, change them, make sure that you have very strong passwords to get into a lot of that information. And then, you know, One of the things that we see that can be frustrating in law enforcement is people that leave purses and wallets in cars while they're not in their car. It gets broken into, and then people gain access to a lot of identity and account information. So, yeah, it's not always a stop all when you do everything on your end to try to prevent it, but doing what you can help prevent your identity being stolen.
Yeah, and I mean, I may be alone in this, but I don't even know what's in my wallet, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if it got taken, I wouldn't know what's what.
Right, right. You have insurance cards, you have your driver license, you have passports. Sometimes you have, of course, a lot of different credit cards and debit cards. So, yeah, it can be terrifying to have your information stolen.
I also wanted to ask you about just the number of domestic violence calls that we see every week on the sheriff's report. It seems like there's more, but is that just because we've got more people, or is there anything in particular going on? Or?
You know, anytime we have a population increase, of course, being a resort community, we see a lot of visitors come in. Yeah, of course, you're going to deal with a lot more crime as population increases. The domestic violence trends are terrifying. We see that across, I think, the country. Domestic violence seems to be increasing, and whether or not it's truly we're seeing more and more of it each day, or if people are talking about it more and are gaining that strength to come forward and report it, it would be interesting to know if we are truly seeing trends going up. But the amount of reports that we see, when we pull annual numbers, it seems that they keep on going up each year. So yeah, it's terrifying, and it's one domestic violence incident is way too much in our community, and so that's why we team with so many different organizations throughout the county, the not-for-profits, the Peace House, to try to get the word out, to talk about it, to encourage victims of domestic violence to report it and to understand the cycle of domestic violence and to do everything that they can to protect themselves. Law enforcement, the sheriff's office, we're here to do everything that we can to protect those. We have different options that we use to try to protect the victims of domestic violence.
And certainly where the majority of the domestic violence crimes are committed by men against women. I mean, I've seen even a couple of things the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. We deal with it on both sides.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, we all know how to push our partners' buttons. And I mean, is that the best thing? Just being mindful of it's time to walk away. But at the same time, I think that could just anger the other person even more when there's not that engagement.
Yeah. Yeah. I think obviously every relationship is different, but communication, I have found, in my personal relationships, communication is key. Talking about those things that really bother you, and then learning how to cope with the frustrations that you might experience in your relationship. But truly communicating that with your partner and, really working through those differences that you may have. Sometimes substance can get behind people's emotions if they've been consuming alcohol or if they've engaged in any kind of other substance abuse or on any kind of prescription medication. It can alter the way you think. And of course, we'd want people to avoid any kind of confrontation as far as physical violence goes. It's always healthy to communicate and talk things out, but violence is never the answer.
Yeah, let's take a look at some of the with the recent legislative session ending. Anything that affects the Summit County Sheriff's Office or your staff?
Yeah. So this year, well, it seems to be brought up every year, the public safety retirement that was brought up this year. Back in 2011, they had changed the public safety retirement so that it required new law enforcement officers, public safety officers, to work 25 years and have a 37.5% retirement after that 25 years of service. Prior to that, it was a 20-year service at 50%. And so what we have seen and all law enforcement agencies across the state have experienced over the last several years a challenge in recruitment because, when you get paid a fairly low wage to be in law enforcement to deal with the stress and the sometimes the controversy that surrounds law enforcement and what we do. It's pretty tough to swallow that 25-year retirement and only get that 37.5%. And so we had some lawmakers that sponsored a bill to change that. Of course, they didn't. We would have loved to see it come back to the 20 years at 50%, but they were able to get it at 25 years and bring it back up to 50%. Locally here, of course, it affects agencies, it affects cities and counties. They're going to have to pay more into the system. I've had the opportunity of sitting on Summit County's legislative committee, and so I was able to work closely with some of our county councilors, Kim Carson and Glenn Wright, and we are appreciative of their support in this, and they have said that they feel that this is important. What that's going to do for us, at least we will see, you know, once this comes into effect, I believe it goes into effect in May of this year, we'll see what it does to our recruitment. Right now, we're down 7 deputies just on our patrol side, and we've been down deputies for over a year now trying to recruit. We're getting low applicant numbers. We're getting lower quality of applicants. And so we'll see if this is one of those recruitment tools that we can use to try to attract some good quality deputies to come and work in Summit County.
Well, the test takes somebody different, though, right? I mean, it's not an easy job, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, yep. A lot on the line. Let's see, anything else in terms of legislation that you wanted to mention?
I'm trying to remember that. Of course, there's always a lot that happens, but that was kind of the big one for us.
Yeah. So have you been able to do some hires or not necessarily?
Yeah. So we have recently hired, we got three new deputies within the last couple months. Two of them are experienced, which we were excited about. When you have a young law enforcement team, it's nice to have someone that's got some tenure and that can come in and help provide a little bit of mentorship to our current deputies. We hired a brand new deputy who is in the police academy. He graduates next month, so we're excited to get him out to work. And then, of course, our recruitment is ongoing. So we just hired one in our court services. We've been down in all aspects of our office, different divisions. So we got a female that we hired, female deputy, that starts with us next Monday on April 1st. And then we are always seem to be recruiting for dispatch and in our jail. So it's looking positive where we are recruiting people. But it continues to be a challenge, and we're excited to see what this new legislation does for us.
Okay, finally, I wanted to ask how the county's K-9 program is changing with the legalization of medical marijuana.
Good question. That has presented a big issue for us, and basically what we have done is taken the dogs off the streets for now. Because with the legalization of marijuana, if our dog indicates, our dogs are trained in marijuana detection. If they indicate on a vehicle and someone lawfully is in possession of marijuana, it creates bad case law for us. And we don't want to do that. We want to respect, the change in laws. And so at this point, it's a matter of waiting and seeing, if there's going to be any kind of new court cases that come out that dictates how we can operate, but at this point, we would rather err on the side of caution and not put ourselves and other people in a situation that could create a lot of heartache for either side. So at this point, we still have the dogs. They're still available for the schools because, of course, there are still drug-free zones, so we can utilize them. But as far as the regular traffic stop type stuff, we are not using the dogs for that at this point. Of course, we can utilize them for our jail as well.
Yeah. What about like the interstate travel though? I mean, that's where you find some of the big hauls.
Yeah. So the sheriff's office has never really participated in that interdiction. Of course, we will, if we are asked to participate in some sort of a big operation. In the past, we do have a deputy that is assigned, cross-deputized with the Homeland Security, but he is helping with them, usually down in the valley. And then, of course, the Highway Patrol, they are specific to the interstate. So we will help out on that kind of stuff. But, of course, large amounts, when we're talking pounds and truckloads, that is still illegal. You still cannot possess that kind of amount of marijuana. And, of course, the law dictates what kind of marijuana you can have, whether it's edible or smoking marijuana or oil or whatnot. So lots of things to see and watch, to see how things change. Just like other states, you have to adapt to the new laws that come out, and we're willing to wait it out and make sure that we are protecting everyone's rights.
Yeah. Finally, just want to ask you, are you the official public information officer?
I am.
Yeah. Yep. So do you guys still take turns with that? You can't work 24/7. I guess you can.
Well, sometimes that's what you do. I am the full-time public information officer for the sheriff's office. I Sheriff Martinez handles media requests as he sees fit. We've had a little bit of a change in our office, so I will have a couple backup PIOs for when I'm, of course, on vacation or out of the area and unable to respond. For the most part, that you'll see me and hear me, but we do have some backups that'll be coming on board.
Okay, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Sheriff Lieutenant Andrew Wright. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now in the studio, Tom Webb with U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's talk. We had U.S. National Championships happening this past week.
Yes, we have. So we've been running two events up in New England, a tech and a speed event. So we've been at Sugarloaf, Maine and Waterville, New Hampshire. Michaela Schifrin, who was hot off some media appearances in New York, made a surprise appearance in Waterville. But the big story was Nina O'Brien. So she has now added 4 U.S. championship titles to her resume. She won the Super G and the Alpine combined, followed that up with victory in the parallel slalom, and then won slalom yesterday as well.
So did Michaela even compete?
No.
Just watched and signed autographs.
Yeah, she did, yes. And I think, it's always good when Michaela can come to that sort of event because she serves as such an inspiration, not only for the competing athletes, but for the younger people who are there as well, giving them an opportunity to see this true superstar. We've talked a lot about Michaela. I think for the purposes of this, the Nationals, is not something that she puts herself into, but that means we have opportunities for people like Nina to go out and make a name for herself on that kind of national level.
Right, and I don't know that I recall hearing Nina O'Brien before. Was she, competing on the NORAM and Europa Cup?
No, so Nina has done a couple of World Cup events. She's been on the team for a little bit now. She's one of those up-and-coming athletes. And I think, when you see somebody like that having such success across different disciplines, that bodes very well. I think it's extremely rare, and I think Michaela would probably be the only person you could lay claim to actually being able to kind of dominate both tech and speed. But seeing somebody like Nina having such a good result in those championships is really good. She was actually also joined by another young man, Luke Winters, who I met for the first time in the summer. He came to a big partner summit that we do and spoke very eloquently to a bunch of our sponsors. A very cool young man who also is making his name. So he won his first US title in combined. He finished 11th in the Super G and then won the slalom portion of that. And then he also won slalom, so a double nationals champion. And also Ryan Cochran-Siegel, another guy who's been making some good news in the World Cup. He won the Super G on Wednesday, that was last week, and downhill. So a really good week, I think, for those up-and-coming athletes and something that they can put in the closet and look forward to the summer as they plan next season as well.
Yeah, so is that kind of what the Nationals are for then? Really kind of the developing athletes?
It is. Every sport that we're involved with has Nationals championships, and it's just another one of those stepping stones up to World Cup success for those kind of athletes.
Okay, let's see. Cross country, are we finished with that as well?
So the World Cup is finished, yes. We still have a number of other Super Tour events going on here in the US. The World Cup finished up in Quebec City. Sadie Bjornsson, she put herself 6th in the freestyle sprint on Friday and then finished 11th overall on Sunday in the mini tour. The focus for us now is actually getting Jessie Diggins and her ex-teammate, Keegan Randall, back from Quebec City to New York. Anybody who's tuning into the Today Show tomorrow, look out for them. They're going to be on air talking about a year to go for the Cross Country World Cup, which is going to be taking place in Minneapolis, as well as a couple of other things, I think, which are maybe a little more personal for them. In particular, Keegan, who, as anybody who follows the sport probably knows, she won her Olympic gold medal, came back to the US, and then had to announce that she had breast cancer. So she's been fighting that incredibly hard over the last year. I think she just finished a 50K cross-country event. So anybody who's battling breast cancer and can get through a 50K cross-country race at a very serious standard tells you the kind of strength of character she has. So, yeah, they're going to be in New York for the next couple of days doing some events for us.
Yeah, so this 2020 World Cup, I mean, this is like in downtown Minneapolis. Is that what's going to happen? You're going to build a track on the streets or something?
So we're working with an organization called the Lopit Foundation who run a whole bunch of cross-country events up in Minneapolis already. But, yeah, we're going to be in a place called Worth Park, which, funnily enough, one of our trustees, one of our terrific supporters, is a guy called Andy Worth, who's from Minneapolis. And I think I'm right in saying it's his great-grandfather, or it's certainly one of his grandparents. The park is named after them. So we have a very close tie to that. But yeah, Jessie and Keegan came back from Pyeongchang and did a whole bunch of media about this time last year. And both of them were talking a lot about their desire to bring the Cross Country World Cup back to the US. It's been about 20 years since we had a stop of the World Cup here in the US. And being able to use that as a springboard to promote the sport, to try and bring more people in, is an obvious benefit of winning an Olympic Games. So we work very hard with the International Ski Federation and with these terrific folks at the Lopit Foundation to try and bring the World Cup back. And yeah, we're going to be up in Minneapolis. We think March 17th, that needs to be finally ratified by the International Ski Federation, which we'll be doing over the summer. But we're all systems go for what should be a huge event at the back end of the 2020 season, with all of those superstars from the Cross Country World Cup coming into Minneapolis to come and compete in the first World Cup event there, as I say, for about 20 years. So we're really excited about that. There's a lot of prep and planning already going into place for that. The Lopit folks have got some extremely ambitious targets for how many people they want to come in. They're talking about tens of thousands of people coming to see the what will be a night race. But we think that the support for cross country up in Minnesota in general, and particularly that being Jessie Diggins' home state, I think that we can see expect to see some huge crowds up there. So we're really excited about that.
Okay. Let's see. Coming up in May, I think it is, the annual U.S. Ski and Snowboard Congress. So what is that?
Yeah, so our chief exec and president, Tiger, is going to come in and talk to you a little bit more detail about that in due course. But Congress is an annual event here in Park City. We have hundreds of people coming into Park City to come and talk about the future of the sport. So it's an opportunity for lots of people who are involved at the regional and national level to help shape the future of the different disciplines that we work in. So there's a lot of people coming in who really are the backbone of the sport. You know, they may not be the folks who you see on TV or you hear their names or read about them, but without their input, without their dedication and passion for every single sport that we represent, frankly, we wouldn't be able to run the wide array of different disciplines that we have here. So we have about 4 days of meetings. They start early, they finish late. We have an award ceremony where we recognize the people, not just the athletes, but the volunteers, the officials, the coaches who've made a real difference to the sport over the last year and for a long time before that. And Tiger Shaw gives a keynote speech where he talks about really what the big priorities are for us. Last year, he talked about the importance of athlete safety. And that's still a topic that is very, very close to our hearts and something that we're spending a lot of time working on. But yeah, it's a big Park City event. It's not one of the showcase events like Sundance or the recent World Championships, but we bring a lot of folks in who love coming into Park City in mid-May to, as I say, come and help shape the future of the sport.
Okay. Here, Park City Ski and Snowboard busy raising money for their new training center at the Utah Olympic Park. I believe U.S. Ski and Snowboard is part of this. It's one of the kind of the triangles.
Yeah, and the UOP is an incredibly important facility for us. Obviously, there are some world-class training facilities there. Things like the airbag that we have up during the summer and the opportunity for our freestyle athletes to be able to use the pool over the summer is an incredibly important part of our training program. The bag in particular gives an opportunity for free skiers and snowboarders to practice tricks that maybe they couldn't have the opportunity to do so. As maybe listeners to the show know, I'm a relatively recent arrival to Park City, and I remember driving through Kimball Junction and seeing those ski jumps up there and my jaw dropping, because it's not very often that you see actual Olympic facilities that close. But having those on our doorstep is an incredibly important part of our program for a whole bunch of our athletes, frankly, as well as it just being a really cool place. I'm very lucky that I worked with a man called Callum Clark. If Callum's listening to this, he'll be going bright red as I speak about this. But Callum recently left US Ski and Snowboard to go work at the UOP. And I think that he's going to be helping build on some of the incredible success that they have there. I think they bring in hundreds of thousands of people over every year who want to go and see and experience some of what's available up there. From our perspective, we want people to know that you can go there and you can watch Olympic superstars training throughout the summer, and they're there during winter as well. So, yeah, it's a really important part of our world, and we're very pleased that they are there.
Yeah, but it's really going to be built for the young kids. I mean, it's not for your level, right?
It's not that what you're specifically referencing isn't. Yeah, but I mean, you can see that there is development going on up there. Anyway, there are things like the accommodation block, which is going to benefit athletes of all ages and all levels of competition. And as I say, I mean, one of the unique things about the UOP is it does provide that opportunity for athletes from elite down to grassroots to be able to train. So that's pretty special.
Okay, well, we'll see you next week.
You will see me next week, and okay. That, I think, might be it for the season.
Okay. Hey, Tom, thanks for the update.
Thank you.
It's Tom Webb with U.S. Ski and Snowboard. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Park City Christian Center built a new event venue to host community events, business meetings, parties, and more. In the studio with details about how you can participate in naming that space, I have the director, Rob Harder, along with events coordinator, Debbie LaBelle. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Rob, let's just ask. Tell us what you're asking people to come up with names for. Tell us a little bit about the space.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're a humanitarian community center, and so we really just strive to continue to be a place where the whole community can come. And now that we have this expanded space, we have two buildings. We've more than doubled our square footage. We've got this dedicated space. It's really our special event space. And we just thought it'd be kind of fun for the community to pitch in and say, help us name it, like make it something that really feels like it's Park City, that's very community focused, and so we just love to get some input.
Yeah, so the addition is it part of the addition or is it part of the old space?
Part of the old space, the remodeled space, that third floor, but we did decide to invest in some money to really make that much more conducive than it used to be for special events.
So that was part of the planning process, thinking
exactly.
That, right, that
that's
the,
right.
The community needed something like this, or, I mean, you alone would have, I mean, enough events to...
That's a good point, you know, but, you know, our goal has always been Monday through Sunday. We wanted that place to be used all the time, you know, as much as possible. And so, for example, yeah, we realize we do have a lot of programs we use already, but there's also it's good, like reasonable priced space in the city is tough to find, and our location is just a great location, you know, in between Kimball Junction and Main Street, right on Deer Valley Drive. So we thought this is a perfect spot, so let's make sure we make it available for the community for all kinds of different events.
Yeah, so how many people could be there in that space?
So technically 208 people can actually be there in one setting, and then we've got, of course, a lobby. We also have got a nice little deck, so there's some other things you can spread out if you have a little bit larger party.
And exactly, and a commercial kitchen, sorry.
Yeah. So you have the parking, though, for that? I mean, did you need some kind of special permit to open that?
That's a great question. Parking is very limited, and so one of the things that we do have built into the project is kind of like what we're doing citywide, right, is to really reduce your driving and use the public transportation. The nice thing is there's so many great free bus rides all over town, and there's one that drops right around the corner from the Christian Center. Or, of course, we can come up with a shuttle system. We've done that, valet parking. So we'll come up with a plan that is still very reasonable.
Okay, so Debbie, is there a charge for the space?
Yes, there is. And we have kind of a tiered system based on the type of partner. So we have a partner pricing, and then we have nonprofit pricing, which is a little lower, and then we have community pricing. So, but it is very reasonable.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the contest itself. This doesn't open until what? The end of the month?
March 31st, correct.
Okay. And what's going to happen with the contest?
Yes. So we're asking people to simply email eventcoordinator@ccofpc.org, and we're asking them to kind of pick their most three most creative names and send it to that email address. And we will then review those names, and as a staff team, we will choose by the 15th of April.
Okay. What are
the... Actually, I'm sorry. The contest ends the 15th of April. We'll choose after that, the 22nd.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you could have sold this for naming rights, no? You didn't want to do that? I mean, in terms of, you know, after a person, if they had paid enough money or...
Sure.
That's a great point. You know, we went through that with our capital campaign, and we really decided, number one, giving a shout out to Jim and Susan Swartz. You know, they really helped start this and invested a lot of money, and they just decided we don't want this to be any one person's name. We want this to be the community center and the Christian Community Center, if you want to call it that. So this is kind of in the same spirit. Like, let's make this a community thing. Let's get the community to give some input and go that route rather than just an individual name.
Okay, because I was going to say that would be real easy to buy votes that way.
It would have been much easier, totally. We decided a while ago we're not doing that. So, yeah, it's a little different. It made it a little more difficult for capital campaign, but much more better with the community focus.
But you're looking for something, I guess, you know, like we saw, it's the Park City Municipal Athletic Recreation Complex, or PC Mark. We know it as the Mark. I mean, you're looking for something catchy or an easy to say.
Yeah,
you know?
Something that speaks to Park City and really feels like home to us. Something Park City.
Okay. And then is there a prize other than bragging rights? Did I name that building? Or
there is a prize. We actually are offering a $200 gift card to the Christian Center Boutique.
And of course, bragging rights.
And bragging rights, of course, too, which is awesome. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In terms of the reservations, and for the is it ready to go, even though it doesn't have a name?
We are ready to go, actually. And so Debbie can kind of talk about the specifics about
that. Yes, we've actually already done several events there. And we sort of rolled it out in January. And we did start doing, you know, film screenings, business meetings, parties, retreats, things like that. So we've already actually done quite a bit. We're really just looking for a name now to make it official.
Okay. How do people go about reserving it?
So they actually, there's on our website, on the Christian Center website, there is a meetings and events section, and they can also email eventcoordinator@ccofpc.org to look into it. But we have a calendar on our website that indicates when it's available.
Okay, so all of you creative folks, you have until April 15th. Again, you want people to put in the email the subject line CCPC event venue name so you don't lose them.
Correct.
And if somebody comes up with the same name, then what happens?
So what we've decided, we've figured that may happen, is that the person who has submitted it first actually will win the prize. So it does give incentive to go ahead and submit those names quickly.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
No, just come by. If you've not seen it, we'd love to give you a tour. Just stop on by. It's a great space, and you can check out all the other programs and services as well.
Okay. Is this where you're going to be doing your dinners?
You know, yes. We just finished them up, actually, for the season. Yeah, so they used all those international students came through. Had a great season, by the way, this year. The numbers went back up, and we're not totally sure why, but it was great to have so many kids come through.
Yeah. How many do you guess that you did every
week?
So
we had about 100 on average, and we had 8 weeks. And so I think Pete Stoughton said we're close to 800 people, a little bit more.
Wow.
Isn't that great? So, yeah. So, international students were coming through our building almost every day throughout the week.
Great. Okay. Hey, Rob and Debbie, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.